Hello and welcome. I'm Patrick Curtis, your host and chief monkey, and this is the Wall Street Oasis podcast. Join me as I talk to some of the community's most successful and inspirational members to gain valuable insight into different career paths and life in general. Let's get to it. In this episode, member Nightshade shares his winding road to working at one of the top proprietary trading shops in the world. We cover how he continually took on a lot of risk and bet on himself, what he did when he was unemployed for months at a time, more than once in the first few years out of school, and how he prepared for the tricky brain teasers and mental math that can rattle even the most polished candidates. Enjoy. Nightshade, thank you for joining the Wall Street Oasis podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So it'd be great if you could just walk the listeners through your background.
Yeah. So my current role right now is, I guess you can give it a few names, trader, portfolio manager, market maker of options. So we're trading the implied volatility of options on fixed income products. I know on the website you guys like to distinguish whether it's a buy side or sell side role. So technically this would be a buy side role. And so the function of my job and my business is to provide, you know, liquidity on exchange traded products. And again, we're in the fixed income portion of the merge. So yeah.
Cool. And so did you go to school for this? How did you kind of how did you do an undergrad, and then how did that kind of proceed to you getting this job?
Yeah. So, you know, I went to UIUC, University of Illinois, studied economics and got a minor in informatics, which is kind of like, computer science-ish. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I had buddies in college that, you know, they had always been talking about finance and trading and all that. But to be honest, you know, I didn't really know too much about financial markets. I just knew that, you know, coming out of college, I wanted to create the best life for myself. And I knew that finance and trading was something that can definitely, you can make a little bit money quicker than everybody else. So I kind of just, I stuck to the idea of becoming a trader, and that was kind of,
it. It was mostly like friends kind of telling you about it, you feel like, or like upperclassmen or something? Or were you trading with your own accounts and stuff?
Friends I grew up with, like in high school and college, yeah. You know, their parents were more in like the finance world, and I was just kind of like the kid on the side, yeah. You know, listening quietly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I took their passions and kind of made it my own, so.
Got it. Was your family not in the finance space at all, like your parents?
No, not really. My mom's a teacher. My dad works for an engineering firm. So
got it.
Know, I really had no connection in besides just like my friends talking about it.
So. Okay, so you get to college. You're kind of like you kind of want to go into finance right from the get go, right? You're just not too sure about what specifically, or you're thinking trading side.
Yeah, I mean, even throughout college, I hadn't. You know, econ major, that's kind of, you know,
it's broad.
The ticket to any kind of, you know, it's very broad. So I could have done, you know, business, consulting, whatever.
Right.
And then you hit senior year and you're kind of like in this existentialism where it's like, you know, what am I really going to do with my life? So in, you know, in those 6 months up until graduation, that's when I really kind of buckled down and figured out, you know, what are my skills? What am I good at? What do I value? And, you know, where do I see myself? So, you know, Do I want to be emailing back and forth all day and going to meetings? Not really. Do I want to do stuff that's analytical and math based? Probably more so. Mm-hmm. I knew I was good at math, like mental math and stuff like that. So I kind of just took a guess, and it ended up being what I liked. So
that's interesting. Yeah. So like when you were waiting, kind of, did you have internships kind of going through school, like trying to figure that out as well? Or like you felt like it took all the way till senior year to really hone, like, were you doing trading internships and stuff?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so, like, you know, I wasn't really, I wasn't trading on any, like, brokerage accounts. I wasn't doing anything on the side like that. I wasn't really interested in it. And, like, freshman, sophomore year, I was driving a truck, funny mm-hmm. enough. So I was delivering, like, bags of ice. And then, you know, I had interviewed for a job, an internship at the exchange, so CME Group. Mm-hmm. I did have a slight connection there. My stepmom happened to have worked at the exchange and like market regulation or something many years prior.
Yep.
So she kind of just, you know, emailed someone for me, and it ended up landing me an interview, and I didn't even get the job right away. It was like midsummer. They ended up calling me saying that the guy that got my position quit and that they needed someone to fill the gap. So yeah. I was sitting in my truck And they're like, and I accepted the job offer. So
hell yeah. So then you run there, right? Yeah, like just awesome. To get that on your resume.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It was awesome. So yeah, I got the experience of, you know, working in some sort of financial institution. It was, you know, it was operations at an exchange. So really all I got to see was how, you know, cash balances between the prime brokers netted out on the exchange level.
Mm-hmm.
And so just being able to talk about that in any interview going forward, it was something that made you sound smart and it was finance related. So it was automatically kind of like a foot in the door.
Got it. And it gave you a couple good bullets for the resume, I assume.
Right.
That were focused on trading. So like once you did that, were you like, this is definitely what I want to do, but like obviously more on the actual trading side and less on the operations?
Yeah, I just remember like sitting in college, reflecting back on my summers in the internship, and I just remember the corporate culture was just something I didn't really gel with. You know, people were, I don't know. It's just something I felt like I needed to do more, something more risk-taking, a little bit more adrenaline-filled. After a couple of months just staying in the office at the exchange, I just knew I wasn't for it. So cool. Yeah.
So tell me kind of what proceeded next. So that was after your sophomore year? That was like your sophomore summer?
Yeah, sophomore summer and junior summer.
In junior summer, you did it. Yeah. So tell me how that, then like, okay, you get to senior year, you don't have a full-time offer. You're a little nervous, existential crisis, like what am I going to do kind of thing?
Kind of, yeah. So, you know, I did have an offer at the exchange.
Okay.
You know, I think the offer was, you know, 65K, which isn't bad at 22 years old. Mm-hmm. And part of the package was like, you know, they're going to pay for your master's degree if you want it. And, you know, you can climb the ladder there. But, you know, I started asking around like people that I had met, like my friend's parents that were like, one of my friend's parents was an MD at a bank.
Yeah.
So I asked him like, you know, what would you do in that situation? You know, I want to be a trader. I don't really want to, you know, pigeonhole myself into a job in an exchange. You know, and his advice was, you know, you got to just take the job offer that you have. It's always easier to transition after you have a job and you're starting to make money.
Right.
But, you know, I tend to find, you know, I have my own opinions and I've tended to make the right decisions throughout my life, it seems.
Yep.
I don't know.
So you're stubborn, in other words.
I guess the word is stubborn, yeah. So even though an MD at a top bank would tell me to take the job, I was like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. So I declined the offer and I just kind of went, oh, okay, yeah, no, let me backtrack. So
sure.
After declining that offer, I was like, all right, well, now what? What do I do? So
yeah.
I was like, all right, well, who do I know that could potentially get me into trading? I didn't really want to ask my friends because it's kind of like that gray area. You don't want to like step on people's toes.
Mm-hmm.
So I remembered a conversation in high school I had with a girl, and she was telling me about how her dad was a trader. And I remember like going to a party at her house, and her house was really big. And I was like, oh, how do you have all this money? So I messaged her on Facebook, and she ended up connecting me with her dad. Like this is, you know, totally out of left field. And I ended up having a phone conversation with him. He sent me over, gave me the number to a guy that he used to trade with. I talked to him, walked into the office, basically said, hey, you know, I'll work for free. I really want to be a trader. Like, I'll do anything it takes, you know, kind of shot the shit with him. Use my language. But he was like, you know, I think you should, you know, keep perusing and come back to me if you don't find anything.
Hmm.
And I didn't find anything after a month. And so once I graduated, I gave him another call. Said, hey, you know, I don't have a job offer now. Do you mind if I come work for you for free? Walked back into the office. They gave me my trading jacket. And I got introduced to the trader I was going to work for.
What does that mean, trading jacket? Sorry if I'm totally clueless with trading. What does that mean, trading jacket?
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, we'll pay you $10 an hour. You can be an intern. Let me find you a trader that you're going to work for. So they found one of the guys that was pretty profitable under their group.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of like just a standalone trader.
Yep.
Trading on the floor. So you need a jacket to be on the floor.
Got it.
Trading jacket.
Got it.
It's the jacket that you hold all your trading cards in and all that stuff.
So you're still on it. You still ended up on the floor, but it was at least doing the actual trades, not as operations, not like clearing.
Right. Yes.
Stuff.
Exactly. So okay. $10 an hour to not do operations to be kind of in the track that I wanted, but
hey,
I wasn't even trading. I was a clerk, you know, so I just, you know, I talked to this guy when he wasn't on the, you know, in the actual pit. He would just come and say hi to me. I'd ask him questions. I'd read this book called Option Volatility and Pricing by Sheldon Nathenberg. So I kind of like obsessed over that and a couple other books, and just would just pick this guy's brain, and then I would like run and get him coffee and lunch, and then clear his trades. And then, you know, after 5 months, I was as good as anyone my age.
Did you feel like this is something you'd be doing after graduating with a college degree? Like, did you expect this, or was it whatever, I'm just going to do what I have to do? Was that the mentality, or I'm curious to kind of, like, did you ever look up when you were kind of reading those books, fetching coffee, running around, like, and think, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm here? Or were you appreciative, or were you like disappointed? I'd love to get a little insight there.
I didn't come from a wealthy background at all. Mm-hmm. So just being able to be on the floor and see the culture, and like just being in that room and seeing who's the guy that's always on CNBC that's screaming, what's his name? Oh, Rick Santelli.
Yeah.
I saw him. So yeah, I was more than appreciative. It was probably, you know, it was kind of a dream come true in a way. Like, even though I wasn't getting the, you know, I wasn't making the money,
yeah,
I was there, you know,
yeah.
I was around it. So no, it was awesome. I remember just having extreme like bursts of adrenaline and like euphoria when I was reading these books and like helping this guy out. And like, you know, you could tell that he was actually like generally impressed with my work. Like I was asking him all the right questions within a few weeks. Like, you could tell that I was understanding options trading pretty quickly, which is, you know, it's not an easy thing. You know, reading these like textbooks, it's super dry, and then to understand it right away, it was pretty impressive in its own way. So I was proud of myself.
Yeah, and so he was impressed by, you know, within a couple months, you were asking a month or so, you were asking the right questions, you're reading, and you're kind of seeing how all the theories being applied actually on the floor.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. So what made you, was it because you were just so interested in it? Or was it because you were just like, hey, I want to become an actual, the only way I become an actual trader is if I, you know, master this? What was the motivation behind that? Was it money? Was it just trying to survive?
Yeah, I guess it was a culmination of things. You know, in my mind, it was like, you know, this is kind of my one shot. You know, there's only a few jobs you can get given my GPA, given my degree, that are going to pay you, you know, quickly six figures at 22, 23, 24 years old. Otherwise, you know, you're in a desk job, you know.
Right.
So you can get into investment banking, but that's a lot of work. And quite frankly, I'm a little lazy when it comes to certain things. the options trading, it was very cerebral and it was very math based, and like the theoretical side of it was just like cool to think about, like how you look at like, you know, I don't know, like the bell curve and like normal distributions and like how like those things change given like certain assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, like I had somewhat of a stats background, somewhat of a programming background. So it just felt like it just made sense for me to get into, and like I could apply it. I just saw myself being good at it. And I guess another reason was a lot of people would compare trading, like that adrenaline rush and that decision making.
Mm-hmm.
They compare that a lot to like video games, I guess, as cheesy as it is. Like, you know, esports is becoming super big right now.
Yep.
Some guy in the news the other day just made $3 million for winning a tournament.
I saw that.
So
yeah,
kind of. I just remember, like, you know, growing up, I was big into Halo and like all these different like video games, and I was extremely good at those. You know, when I was 15 years old, I put a video online of me going, you know, 31 kills, zero deaths in Halo, and I got like 30,000 views pretty quickly. And like I never even like logged onto my YouTube account. And like, I just looked, I was like, oh wow, that's pretty cool.
That's funny.
Just knew that I had, like, you know, I was quick at decision making. I loved adrenaline, and I knew that I had, my opinions tended to be right
at
certain times when they needed to be.
Yep.
So I just knew that trading itself was something I knew I could be good at.
Yep.
So I kind of just went with it. Yeah.
Curious, do you play poker at all?
You know, I play a little bit, but no, it's nothing I got super into. I get too impatient. After an hour, I just want to like go all in.
Yeah, you want to gamble. Yeah. Got it. Okay, so in terms of the progression, then, so you're there, you're an intern. I assume they eventually make you a trader. How does that work? Or, you know, how long are you expected to be an intern? Is there communication around that? Are they telling you like, hey, if you do a good job for a year, there's a chance we'll make you, you know, full time or whatever? How does that work?
Yeah. So this was definitely tricky, and it was kind of a contentious thing that happened after a few months. So, you know, he would say, like, hypothetically, hey, you know, I could pay you 50 grand to be like a full-time clerk and like learn to actually trade on my account, and you can start making some trades. And he would say that like hypothetically, but he never actually like gave me the offer. So mm-hmm. Then after 5 months, I was like, hey, listen, like, I'm sick of getting you coffee and stuff. Like, are you going to give me a pay bump?
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up, he, he gave me a pay bump. He, you know, he offered me to do all those things, but it wasn't the dollar amount he had been talking about for those past few months. So I kind of felt blindsided, if not like disrespected in a slight way.
Was he trading you? he was arbitraging the labor, your labor.
Yeah, I mean, it's a classic trader move, saying one, give, anchoring me to one level, and then like
right.
actually offering me a different level, knowing that I'd probably take it. But no, when he gave me that offer, you know, I at the time, you know, I was so gung ho about like making stuff happen for myself, where I just immediately walked out of the room. I was like, "Thank you, I appreciate it. Thank you for your time. I'll talk to you later."
Yeah.
I walked out, and then that was kind of it. So then I was back to square one again. Like, well, what do I do? But now I had the resume that had all this trading experience, and I knew, like, after these 5 months obsessing over it, like, I was more hireable than pretty much anyone that would walk into like an entry level trading position.
Even if there was someone back up for a second. Even as a clerk, you felt like you could talk about the trades on such a level because you'd kind of been picking his brain for almost half a year. You felt like you were ready kind of to go into an interview. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like 6 months, and like it was literally the only thing I thought about day and night. So like at the end of those 6 months, I knew exactly his business model. I knew how he traded. It was, you know, it was kind of like second nature to talk about.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they got a guy from an Ivy League school to come in for a trading assistant role at a top firm interview, he would probably sound smart because he'd have a bunch of credentials. Like, oh yeah, I went to Stanford. I have a computer science degree.
Right.
I also know a little bit about finance. I have a background. You know, I've been doing trading on my brokerage account. Or there's this guy from UIUC who took on all the risk in the world by like declining offers and like working for free basically. Mm-hmm. Who knows everything about actual market making. So when they talked to me in the interviews, it ended up working out well. But the trick is like, how do you have to have a resume that's built to get you that interview in the first place. Again, I had zero connections. But I built my resume up to look, you know, somewhat perfectly. So like, you know, the top bullet points were, hey, I work on the trading floor for this firm. I have this experience with these, you know, with these numbers. And then below it, I had I knew all the buzzwords at that point. Now I knew they were looking for people with engineering backgrounds, programming backgrounds, stats backgrounds. So I hit all those buzzwords. It's not like, you know, I had that experience in college. It wasn't my major, but I definitely could expound upon the fact that I have experience in R, stats programming, in Python.
Right.
And things like that.
So you were comfortable enough to put it on your resume where you felt like in the interview, if they challenged you on it, you could at least talk about it and you wouldn't be completely lost.
Exactly. So yeah, as long as you can talk about like the application of like, yeah, I can do like financial modeling in Python on a basic level. I can work with data structures, but I understand more so that like, if I can do these things, what am I going to do with that? Like, I can build a volatility pricing model with like a little bit more complex stuff than like the average floor trader. I don't know. So that was valuable. So after a few months, I did start landing interviews.
Tell me about that process. You said after a few months, so you walk out of the room. What's the first thing you do after you say no? Call somebody and vent.
yeah. I probably called one of my buddies like, dude, this is a bunch of bull crap. But yeah, then I get home and then I hop on the computer, kind of like doctor up my resume a little bit better. And then just, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. look for all the easy applies. So like you put in trader and then it says like, it'll bring up a bunch of different job, whatever that people are looking for.
Yep.
And then you find the ones that said easy apply. You put your resume on it and you just click all the easy applies that you can. It's a big time numbers game, you know, cause I don't really care what firm I'm going for right now. I just know it needs to be a firm that has enough people where it's like, you know, they're trading more than one market. Because the guy I was working with before, he was a standalone guy trading beans,
yep.
which, you know, I need to take that experience and go work for like an actual firm that has multiple desks and multiple.
So how did you put like a filter on your LinkedIn search, like employees, 50 employees or more or something like that?
Exactly. Yeah. So I did a filter. I wanted anything trading related, anything like an analyst related.
Did you have to buy a premium LinkedIn premium to do that, or is that built into like the standard standard LinkedIn? Okay.
It was built into standard LinkedIn.
Okay.
So yeah, cool. I mean, after doing that and like then also doing like the nitty gritty applications, you have to put in all your information. It's tedious, but you got to do it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I applied to like 50 different firms that I could, got a few interviews. And then, so step one is like, you know, you talk to HR on the phone, and they kind of just go through your background. And that's where it's easy, because now that my resume is built and it has this training experience, this lady in HR, like, she's just doing her job. Clearly, this guy has trading experience, so we're just going to move him along.
Right.
And so
just as long as you don't sound like a complete psycho on the phone or weird.
Right. Yeah. As long as,
Yeah.
exactly.
Got it. Okay. So, you're basically like at this point, you got the right resume, at least for an entry level trading role, right? You didn't feel like had you seen other people kind of go and become a clerk and then try to join a firm like this? How did you know that specifically this was a path?
It actually, I was told that this definitely was not the path.
Right.
Right.
That's what I would have
Because
said. I would have been
every.
like, that's kind of a weird pit. Like, going onto a floor and then trying to apply to like prop shops and stuff like that. It's just weird to me.
Exactly. Right. Well, because if you have no connections and you don't have a stellar resume, you're never going to get the interview at Chicago Trading Company or
Right.
IMC or
Right.
Optiver. You're just not going to get that interview. There's guys that are applying with 4.2s, extracurriculars, ton of project experience, all from Ivy League
So
schools.
what made you so
So you.
confident walking out that door? Like, you just felt like there were other trading shops that maybe it wasn't the top prop shops that you could get a job at or something?
Yeah, I mean, so there's smaller firms like
Right.
I don't know, like there was spot trading was actually like that's actually a top one of the other top firms. It's no longer in existence, but that's one I applied to.
Yep.
But like you know that like 50, maybe 50 people, 30 people in the organization. Those are the kind of things I targeted.
Okay.
What and so you know that there's I think the word is like they're like weedo firms. I don't know. I don't. They're just not top firms. But I knew that given my experience, they're at least going to entertain my background.
Right.
That's what I did. So after getting the interview, then you talk to HR, then they put you on the next segment, which is like maybe like a math test or
Okay,
like a.
before you go into that recruiting thing, can you tell me what to look out for, like the types of services? There's a lot of gray area in these prop shops. Like, some of them want you to trade, like bring in your own capital. What should people look out for? Like, when if the listeners are interested in this type of job, I know there are a lot of shops out there, like boiler room shops, where they'll just take your money. So can you tell the listeners what to look out for?
Yeah, I mean, if I ever saw something where it was like like a draw, or like you had to put in capital to trade, you just don't want to do that because first off, if you're entry level and you don't know how to trade, then you're literally just going to lose. Like, it just doesn't even make sense. Those types of organizations are for if you have trading background and you know that like let's say you've been trading on a brokerage account for 6 years and like you know for a fact that you can make money, you've proven it to yourself. And you really want to take that risk, you can go work for a firm where they'll give you capital backing and then you kind of like split the P&L. But again, the issue with those is that they don't have their technology is not sophisticated at all. So like I don't know much more beyond that. It just that is not the type of trading that I would recommend or like even entertain as a profession because like there's so much randomness out in the markets, like
Yeah.
it just doesn't make sense. So what you do need to look for is, you know, go to the firm's website, see what they're saying, make sure they have like a strong like kind of like recruiting segment of their website. Like, do they have a bunch of job postings? Read the job postings. Do they have some sort of progression, like an internship program? Do they appear at school, like top target schools? Like, are they going to Michigan, UPenn,
Right.
MIT, stuff like that? Like, are they appearing there?
Got
And
it.
that's how you know it's a good firm because they're putting in the effort to like go meet new talent. And if they're grabbing new talent at 22 years old, that means they're trying to grow the firm, but they're also not giving these people immediate like large responsibilities.
Got it.
That
Okay.
just says that that's a real company,
That's
you know?
great advice. Yeah, so public service announcement for the other firms.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, great. So continue. So the recruit. So you start sending out these resumes. You start landing some interviews. Are they decent shops? Are they kind of mediocre, medium? Like, and then what are the interviews like?
Yeah, so I mean, they're decent shops. Again, I didn't really care as long as it kind of fit that criteria where I knew it was a real firm. Like, I knew that they had capital at risk and that I would be. And I wasn't interviewing for trading roles. It was trading assistant, but trading assistant kind of goes with that notion that you're going to become a trader after a year or two. So it was
Right.
all trading assistant roles I was applying to. So yeah, you talk to the lady on HR, and then they shove you through like kind of like these math tests or like cognition tests.
Is that all
So
online,
the
or you have
inter
to go on site for that?
It's either online or over the phone with the HR lady.
Got it. Okay.
Or it's with, you know, like an entry level trader that just hops on the phone after or on like a second phone call, like a day later or something.
Can you give me an
But either
example of that type of like a question they would ask you?
I don't know, expected value of a dice roll. I don't know, it's 3.5. And then, or like what's, 31 times 33.
Got
how
it.
Fast can you do that? The answer is 1023. So they want to know, like, how quickly you can, one, they want to know, like, can you keep your composure under a stressful question? And two, are you accurate? Mm-hmm. But even if you're not accurate, it's like how you compose yourself after you get it wrong.
Got
so,
it.
So like maybe there's like a little bit more complex of a question that they have to like help you walk, that they walk you through. And at least if you can show them that the light bulb went on at some point throughout that conversation, you might have a chance at moving forward.
Got it.
But
okay.
More interestingly, it was like kind of the, you know, like the cognition test, you know, the online test. So maybe it was like 30 questions. It was all either multiple choice, like math stuff,
mm-hmm.
or just kind of like pattern recognition. And like, I don't even know how to explain it, but I took one of the place I got hired at, ended up getting hired at, there's like a cognition and speed test. And I scored 99th percentile, which I thought was pretty cool. I was proud of myself for that. Pat myself in the back.
That's pretty badass. So,
yeah. It was actually really cool.
Like pattern recognition, like one of those IQ tests, like that like they'll have like a pattern here. You have to match it from like the other side or something like that. And it's complex. So it's like spatial and
exactly.
It's testing like your spatial intelligence, okay, cool.
Right. I think it's actually...
That doesn't surprise me that you scored 99th percentile if you were getting 30 kills on Halo back in the day with no deaths.
without dying.
Yeah, you got to imagine like your spatial and like, I don't know, just hand-eye coordination, like whatever it is, it's just off the charts for to be that good at those video games. But yeah, go ahead. Did you play sports, by the way?
I mean, like growing up when I was young, I did. Like I guess baseball maybe helped a little bit.
Right, okay.
I was more nerdy in high school and college.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Playing nerds here.
Yeah. So I guess after that is then they kind of, if you pass these, you know, the math test, the cognition test, talk to HR, they know you're not crazy. Then they'll pass you on to a final round in person, or maybe not final round, but you're still going in so they can meet you.
Mm-hmm.
And so this firm I ended up getting hired at, you know, they put me in a room with seven guys. You have no clue who they are. They introduce themselves. They'll give you like their first names. They'll say their role at the company. Hey, I'm so and so. I trade crude oil. I'm portfolio manager of this product. Blah blah blah. So that this whole process is super intimidating. Like, maybe it was just me, but I can't stress enough how intimidating it was. Because you know you're dealing with people that clearly know exactly what they're doing, and they know everything that you want to know, but you don't know it, and
right.
They know you don't know it. So they'll ask you questions that'll like kind of, again, they want to see how you deal with stress and how you deal, like maintain composure even when you don't know things. But yeah, so they would ask me, again, like math questions or like, you know, if you could stack, or if you had to stack pennies all the way to the height of the Sears Tower, would it be able to fit in this small room? And then you have to walk them through that. So you say like, obviously the answer is yes. Then you like talk about like the square inches of a penny and like how it would fit within like, you know, a couple square feet in the office. I don't know. So you have to walk them through that. And then they would ask me questions on trading, like, you know, do you know put call parity? You know,
right.
They asked me the style of the trader I worked with on the floor, things like that. So yeah, I mean, obviously like the interview went well, I got hired. So
you're jumping for doing cartwheels when you got that offer. Tell me how you felt when you got that call.
Yeah. So I walked into my dad's office, which was like right down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like telling him how the interview went. And then I got a phone call. This was like 30 minutes after the in-person interview, and they're like, hey, like we'd like to give you an offer. And I just, you know, I sat on the chair and just like exhaled because I'd been holding my breath for a good 6 months.
Yeah.
Or a year or whatever. And you know, I finally got the offer.
So how long between when you walked out of that room to when you got that offer, how long were you, unemployed?
So it was November of 2014 is when I left the trading floor,
mm-hmm.
and I got hired in March of 2015.
Okay, so yeah, it starts getting stressful that time.
Yeah, because the new hiring season starts. You got kids a year younger than you now that are being looked at, so
right.
your window is shrinking.
And so, did you feel like it was a structured process, given that this is well-respected prop shop, or do you feel like it was like they were just looking to kind of get more? A trading assistant in there because they had lost somebody? Like, was it an off cycle type of hire, or was it something that like was alongside other candidates?
It was alongside other candidates because I had seen other people waiting to be interviewed.
And like how many seats were they giving out and how many people were like in that final round, or if you had to estimate?
For that final round, maybe like 5 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
obviously they had psyched me through a bunch more through the phone process, but yeah, maybe 5 or 10.
Yeah.
And I was the one. They ended up hiring 2 people, actually. So it was a guy from University of Chicago that had like a master's in math, and then me. So that was a little intimidating, getting hired alongside this other guy.
Yeah, no pressure.
But yeah, no, I was definitely confident in myself. I knew I had some sort of unique ability that it could be of value to these guys. But so this firm was, you know, I was at this firm for 3 months, and of course, lo and behold, they ended up going, I don't think the right word is bankrupt, but they ended up closing the entire office in Chicago. So after 3 months there, so from March 2015 to July 2015 or whatever, I worked there, and then I was without a job again.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, you're like back to square one, but again, now you've gotten hired by a respectable prop shop, and it's not your fault that the office closed. So you're still kind of, okay, now I got to go through this whole cycle again, but
exactly.
You're still kind of in a good spot resume wise.
Exactly. So now I'm even more refined. I got 4 months on crude oil options.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually like sitting and watching them decision make. I would sit in on meetings for like risk,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like the partners of the firm. So I totally, you know, and I'm applying what I learned on the floor and seeing it, like comparing the differences, and like, I don't know, it was definitely a unique experience. So the last day at that firm ended up being my first day at another firm. I had been interviewing, getting looked by like a lot of firms, you know, even top firms like CTC Caliber.
How long did you have when they said, hey, we're closing this office? How, a couple months?
I had 1 month.
Oh man, not a lot. And so you had already been kind of getting calls and stuff from other top firms.
Yeah. So I started putting my resume out there again, and I was getting hits left and right. But you know, again, I, you know, at that time, I'm 22 years old. I want to have money to like go hang out with my friends also.
Yeah.
So I took the next job I could. So it was an equity options trading firm. They were definitely renowned in that space. They were heavy in the VIX products. They had guys that had been trading VIX options for, you know, 20 years. They were the largest players in VIX. And I just thought that was pretty cool because VIX options trade differently because it's already a volatility derivative product. Mm-hmm. Like the future on a VIX product is,
it's like the derivative of a derivative of a derivative. Right. So your volatility is even crazier or whatever.
Exactly. So it was definitely cool to learn from these guys. And then I got to talk to people that were trading equity, like baskets of equity options. So like anything from Apple stock to Tesla stock, all that stuff, mm-hmm. like learning how options trading works in tandem with like short selling as part of your hedge, and like how, like the hard to borrow stocks, like stocks that are super heavily short, and like how it's not easy to actually get a hedge off if that's the case. I don't know. So there's a bunch of like intricate things I learned at this shop,
mm-hmm.
and I met a bunch of good people, and it was just fun to be around these smart people. But again, it was, you know, this wasn't a full-time trading gig. So I was just, you know, stressing out, like, hey, like, you know, I'm now,
you're still an assistant. You're still a trading assistant.
Yeah. I'm still an assistant.
Right? Yeah.
So I'm a year and a half out. I have all this experience, but I, you know, where, when am I going to actually get my footing? So then, I interviewed for a trading role at that firm, and unfortunately they gave it to the guy who had been interning there for 3 years. You know, it's not like I interviewed bad, but
right.
You know, either the guy that's been interviewing or interning there 3 years or the guy that just showed up a month ago.
Yeah. So, that's tough. So you felt like you had the job. It didn't happen. They gave it to another guy. And then, so you had to keep interviewing. And so why were you interviewing? You just felt like you weren't going to get the trading job at this second firm. They weren't going to promote you anytime soon.
I think I was just getting impatient. So while I was a trading assistant at that firm, I was like, hey, you know, I want to move up the ranks. Can I interview alongside this intern that's, you know, also gunning for this role?
Mm-hmm.
So they let me interview. And then after I, you know, they're like, hey, like, we, you know, we're not going to give you the offer type thing. It ended up being kind of like not an awkward situation because, you know, I got the job offer in the first place at this firm because I had a friend that worked there. So
yeah.
It was kind of more of a favor. Like it was kind of just, you know, no hard feelings. Like, yeah, we're going to give the guy that's been here for 3 years the job, not you.
Right.
So, you know, this was September 2015. I talked to the lady that hired me. Like, yeah, I'm going to see what else I can do. She's like, yeah, feel free to stick around for another month if you need time. Good luck on the rest of your stuff. So I stuck around for a month.
Wait, so you're saying because you were a trading assistant, you interviewed to try and get a promotion. You didn't get it. You had to be like, leave the firm now?
Yeah, it was.
It's just because it's like awkward. I mean, that's the way it works. It's like if you're not getting promoted, you're kind of out. Is that the?
Yeah, like it was, you know, there was really not much of a need for me at that point then. I, you know, because the track is you're trading assistant, you go to trader. It was just, yeah.
But you'd only been there for like how many months?
I was there from July to September.
Yeah, so it's like 3 months, and then that's enough for to be like, okay, that's it. Okay. It's a different world. I don't get it, but okay.
Yeah, no, it was definitely kind of an interesting situation. But so now it's like, all right, so I've been at three firms now. I have all this trading experience. Am I diluting myself? I'm not a trader yet. Like, it was, trust me, it was a stressful time. It's like, am I making the right decisions here? But obviously I had I had a goal in mind. And I think that's extremely important, is to have, you know, you need to know what you want to some degree, so then you can talk about your journey and like sound smart about it as you're talking about it.
Yeah,
like,
your story, you know, have your story down.
Your story's down. So, mm-hmm. So then from September of 2015 all the way till February of 2016, I was just interviewing. And I'm getting hit, but it was post hiring season, and again, like, the barriers to entry are super hard. If you mess up one math question on the phone interview, you're not getting on to the next round. If you know, if the guy didn't like one remark on the phone interview, he just thought, you know, if you say something wrong,
dude, that's brutal. Yeah. That's what, 7 months of interviewing?
It was another 5 months.
5 months
of interviewing. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's insane. So at what point did you think, hey, this is not going to happen? I mean, because there's so few seats out there, right? There's only whatever, 30, 40 prop shops out there that are like respectable, right? Exactly. At least ones that aren't super tiny. And so did you feel like, hey, this is just not going to happen for me? What was at month four, what was your thought process of like, you're getting enough hits where you're still staying positive?
I was getting enough hits to stay slightly positive, yes. Secondly, it was a big mental game. It was just like, you know, again, there was definitely times where I was super discouraged. I was like, this is never going to happen. Like, there's guys that are way, you know, not way smarter, but are just way more qualified. You know, they're a year younger than me now. They're coming out of Ivy League schools. These are the people that are getting hired. Like, it's never going to happen. So, but at the same time, I just knew in the back of my head, like, I know the experience I have, and I know the things that like my superiors were saying to me. They're like, yeah, you're actually really good. Like, we're impressed. Things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I just don't really take no for an answer. Again, I'm stubborn, and I just knew that it was going to work out. I just kind of had faith.
So where do you think that comes from? Like, your stubbornness, or is it like a family trait, or is it something you just kind of grew up being like that?
I think it's, you know, maybe it's a family trait. I think maybe my mom has it, but yeah, I've kind of been that, I've been that way kind of my whole life. I don't know. And like, again, coming from kind of like a poor background, like not having much,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't know. And like, I was smart, and I all my friends were kind of rich. So like, there was like the societal pressure of like being able to like have enough money to go hang out with my friends, you know, like they're going on like yachts and, you know, going on vacation and like doing all these fun things. Like, well, I at least want a good job to talk about. So it was more than just like having a good job. It was like, I needed it. Like, I needed it for like my existence, you know? So that's what really drove me.
It was like, because you were friends with people who just came from, you know, from more, you know, that had more wealth. And so like, they were doing all these things. So it was like even more of a motivating factor, because you're like, man, I really want to do all these things with them, but I can't. Like, I can't go take that trip. I can't do this. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. So you're kind of like, hey, I just, even if you didn't have that much money too, it was like more of a societal thing, like you said, where you having that job would at least allow you to hold your head up high, right? So
it was something cool to talk about, something you can be proud of. I don't know.
Yeah, so yeah, that makes total sense.
That was a bigger driver than anything else, I would say. I
so you're stubborn, you're continually to interview. Like, are you getting to the point where you've kind of applied everywhere? That's like, you know what,
I mean,
what
I mean? You'd be surprised if there's always another firm. But yeah, I mean, I definitely applied to most places, that's for sure.
Because you ended up at a great place. So I'm surprised that like you were interviewing for that long and then ended up where you did. So can you tell me a little bit about like how that happened?
Yeah. So when that firm was going down, that second firm, when it went bankrupt or whatever the word is, I had gotten a hit from this top firm. And so the interview went well with them on the phone. I had talked to some of the traders there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the feedback from HR, I was like, yeah, these guys are generally pleased. We'll get back to you. But they just never got back to me. And that's just kind of how it goes sometimes. So it ended on a positive note. I just hadn't heard anything. So I reached out again. It had been 7 months or whatever. So that kind of it made sense given the time that had passed to reach out again. It was, you know, it wasn't
you didn't
reach
so after an initial phone interview that they said, oh yeah, it was great, you didn't reach out again for 7 months?
It's a good question.
Come on, that doesn't sound that doesn't sound very stubborn.
I could go through my email history right now.
I probably did, and I probably once or twice, and then it was just radio silence, so you like gave you just let it sit.
Exactly. But yeah, so then eventually, you know, they just ended up getting back to me saying, hey, we have a new role in Eurodollars, and it's a trading role. It's for the European shift. It'd be an overnight role. What are your thoughts on that? And I said, yeah, they'd be happy to interview. So the kind of the kicker there is that it's overnight. No one, people that are entitled, they don't want to work the overnight role. So your pool of candidates kind of shrinks pretty quickly.
I'm sure. So what are your hours?
So my hours are, like 11 PM or midnight to 7:30 AM, something like that.
Brutal.
Which again, like, you know, I don't really care. Like it's not, to me, it's not a big deal. Just being able to have this experience, like be something I'm proud of was enough. So yeah, I did another phone interview with HR. You know, you could just tell the difference in like employee quality. I hate to say, but like even just talking to the lady in HR, you can tell she's dealing with, you know, a lot more, you know, people with higher credentials. You know, this lady's also hiring, you know, head of fixed income, head of commodities, head of equities.
She knows what she's talking about. It's not like some random HR person. Like she actually understands trading. Yeah, got it.
So everything about this process is definitely more intimidating. You can feel that it's way more refined. It was either Wall Street Oasis, your website, or some other forums, and I read up about the specific interviews at this firm. Mm-hmm. I read every single post ever on the internet about that firm. There wasn't a single post I didn't read.
WSO is surprisingly a decent place to find out about prop shops. It has its own little kind of micro community. You read everything you could, absorbed everything you could, but it was still like, how else did you prepare? It was just like, were you practicing mental math going into it, or how did you, I guess,
get practicing ready? Mental math, and then like having conversations in my head, kind of like a crazy person, like, you know, like imagining a question being asked to me and then like thinking about my response and then like rethinking about that response, and just, I was obsessive. It was very obsessive mentality, but my thought process became so refined after a year and a half of interviewing and like all this experience that like I was able to respond kind of in a well thought out, smart way.
Did you ever think of getting a mentor or doing mock interviews more like with friends that were in the business?
To be honest, I didn't even know that existed, okay. But had I, I definitely probably would have.
Yeah.
You know, speaking to someone in the industry that's not interviewing you, but that can tell you all these good things is probably the biggest advantage.
Or give you honest feedback, like, hey, that story's good. Your story's good, but this part's a little weak. You know, let's tighten that up. Cool. Okay. So you're doing well. You're like, oh man, you can feel this is like a much more legit shop just through the conversation with HR. She passes you on. What happens next?
So then I get a phone interview scheduled. It's with these two guys that trade the product. But yeah, it was basically everything I read on the forums in terms of like types of questions that they might ask me. So the very first, you know, they introduced themselves, and then the very first question they asked me is, you know, after going through my background and my resume, I talked about that a little bit.
Yep.
It was like, so the first question was, I can't remember exactly. It was like, add up your telephone number and then multiply all the numbers and then something else. It's some sort of mental math using my telephone number. And I had literally just done that problem 20 minutes prior and memorized the answer. Even though I had just gotten a new phone number, oddly enough.
That is amazing.
But yeah, when they asked me that question, I answered it right away. I did do the mental math in my head, so I don't feel totally dishonest that I knew the answer ahead of time.
Yeah.
But I answered it right away to the point faster than these guys even calculated it. They probably asked me and then, you know, did it on a calculator, like wrote it down real quick. But by the time they even wrote it down or whatever, I had already answered it in my head. So that was basically, you know, that was it. Like that was the very first thing I did. From then on, they were already impressed. And then they asked me about like my thoughts on Janet Yellen and like Fed policy moving forward and like how Eurodollars and implied vol should behave given certain scenarios. Talked about that for a little bit.
How did you, were you ready about, where do you feel do you feel like you're actually well versed in macroeconomics and interest rates and movements across those? Like, did you prepare for it knowing that it was Eurodollar?
You can prepare for it. No, I don't think I had really a deep understanding of macroeconomics, but I did know that, like, just like basic stuff that, like, if a yield, like a interest rate product goes up, yeah, that's yields going down.
Right.
So just because I knew that, I was able to, like,
back
talk
into,
about how,
yeah,
back into how, like, puts behave given that reverse scenario. And then, like, talking about, like, I don't know, talking about, like, the Fed dots, I guess I had read some articles about, like, the future projection of Fed rates.
Yep.
And, like, this was kind of like a big thing that was being talked about in 2016.
Yep.
Because this is when they first started to raise rates. So there was definitely stuff easily searchable, easily showing up on Google, where if you had just read the Wall Street Journal articles or Market Watch or things like that, you'd have, as long as you're paying attention, you're making an earnest effort at understanding these things, then you'd be able to talk about it.
Yep. Okay. So continue. So so they're impressed right away, because is this something, the whole phone number thing, was that something you had, like, read about somewhere, so you knew it was potentially coming, or was it something you just did? Like, where did you, how did you get so, like, that? That's kind of lucky, man, right? Like, that's,
man, I am telling you, that is the luckiest thing that happened to me in the whole process. But I mean, so yeah, it was definitely, it was in a forum. I read the problem, did it in my head while I was, like, stressing out at sitting in, like, some office in my dad, like a spare office in my dad's office.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, going over these weird problems, and then the phone call started, and that's when it happened. So it was kind of just like sitting in my mental RAM. It was kind of just already, the answer was already there.
Yep.
So yeah, it was super lucky. But yeah, so then I get off, you know, I get off the phone. That, you know, you could tell that they're impressed because of, you know, the way I answer these certain questions. And then, you know, HR got back to me. They're like, okay, yeah, everything went great. We'd love to bring you on site.
Great.
So yeah. Want me to talk about that?
Yeah, I'd love to hear about that. Yeah, so you go on site. Now it's like, okay, almost like a final round, right? So you're...
This is the final round, biggest firm or best firm in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I am sweating. You can visibly see all the my pit stains, everything. you know, this is, you know, so much adrenaline. My hair is falling out, things like that.
Oh my gosh. So you're like, was it the summer or something? Or are you just so nervous?
I was just, it was January, so I was just nervous.
You're just nervous, okay.
I, you know, walk into the office. The first people I talk to is the lady on HR, and then the two guys I talk to on the phone for the phone interview. And it was kind of more of the same. It was just cool to kind of, like, after they were already impressed, it was just nice to, like, meet these people, shake their hand. And then, like, from there, it's more of like a body language thing. Like, they want to know, you know, do you have a firm handshake? Is the way you speak, is it authoritative?
Right.
You know, can you look me in the eye? Does it look like you have a gape gaze where there's something going on behind your eyes? Like, are you smart?
It's more like, you know, it becomes more behavioral once that you pass that.
It's a behavioral thing.
Crazy technical. Exactly. Yeah, got it. Makes sense.
Right. You know, these guys, are going to have to sit next to you every day. So they want to know that they like you and that you're, like, on the same mental wavelength.
Right.
So
cool.
That was kind of big. But yeah, so then they went over, like, you know, Eurodollar trading strategy and, like, kind of like basic stuff. But, like, something that no one would know unless you actually traded the product. Mm-hmm. So they wanted to see how quickly you can learn something in an interview. And so when he went over those things, you know, I understood it pretty quickly. And so, like, he asked me, like, one question. It was either this or that. I forgot exactly what the answers were, but I said, you know, 50% chance of getting the answer right. I got it right. So then he was like, all right, well, that's enough. And so after that, they brought in the partner. So this guy was the head of Eurodollar trading. So this guy is, you know, this guy's big time. He knows exactly what he's doing. Very intimidating, very smart. Like, seriously, even if I didn't get a job, it was just cool to, like, speak to this person.
Yeah.
So then they kind of explained the trade, like the general thesis behind their book, the way they trade these options. And then they wanted to see, like, kind of the questions I can regurgitate after they explained it. So just to see how you synthesize what they talked about and how you think. And so that went well enough. And then again, he did a mental math question. The
partner did.
The question was 31 times 33. I answered that pretty quickly. And so that was enough. And then, you know, there was a need for someone to work the overnight shift. And it was down to maybe five candidates. The four candidates that didn't get hired, you know, they were all Ivy League guys like Stanford, Princeton, stuff like that. But they just didn't quite have... You know, they didn't have the knack, and they didn't answer the telephone question faster than me, so they hired me.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. Yep. So that's got to feel pretty good after that long search. Cool, man. So tell me a little bit about how it's been there and what's it like. You know, you've been working the overnight shift for how long now?
Yeah. So to be clear, I'm not that firm anymore.
Okay.
Funny enough. So I was there for 2 years, and I took that experience. You know, I'm impatient and stubborn. I want to keep climbing. So now I'm at a startup trying to like grow a business, which is pretty cool. But I can definitely talk about my experience trading Eurodollars.
Sure. That'd be great.
So yeah, I mean, my first day on the job, you know, this is when Yellen's starting to raise rates, and like, you know, just know comparing the sizes. It's all, you know, when you're trading options, it's about like the amount of sizing you're doing. Like, you know, maybe on the floor in the bean pit, they're trading 100 up, and maybe on the crude oil desk, they're trading 500 up. And then when I
can you explain that for the people who don't know those terms, 500 up, 100 up? Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, it's just like the size of the contract you're trading. So like if you're on the screen and you're looking at options and you want to trade something, maybe like a put spread or like a put or mm-hmm. a call spread or something.
Yep.
You know, you decide how much you're going to do. So a one lot would be just one option. 100 lot would be 100 options. So,
right.
But you know, 500 up means it's 500 options on the package or the outright option.
Yep.
So it's just a measure of like the amount of risk you're taking. So I walk into the first day on the Eurodollar desk and they're like, we're half bid at 100,000 up. So it's definitely a big jump from, you know, 100,000.
They're moving a little bit more money.
Yeah. So that's how, you know, you knew. And just looking at like the option inventories, when you look at the actual like position and the risk that they have on, it was definitely, you know, it was institutional size. Like it was, you know, Goldman Sachs would have a similar book, but they wouldn't because they don't even dabble in option volatility market making.
So you guys were like, big enough to actually move the market?
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Like we would trade things and it would shift the entire like term structure.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was super cool. And then like, you know, asking people, I mean, the culture was kind of, how do I explain it? Like people were kind of quiet and like they're all kind of, you can just tell there's a lot of gears turning in everyone's head, which is cool in its own way. So you had to be like choosy about the questions you asked. You know, you didn't want to sound too stupid, even though you were stupid relative to everybody else.
Yep. So it was kind of, it was a quieter, kind of more intellectual culture.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay. So people were kind of just really focused on their job because so much was at risk, I'm sure, across
exactly.
all those desks.
Exactly.
Okay. So yeah, I'd love to hear. So, you know, day to day, what were you with those two guys that were kind of interviewing you initially, like kind of sitting alongside them? Were you given a book right away? Like how did that work? And talk to me about comp a little bit too.
Yeah, sure. So, when I started, you know, I was sitting next to the two guys that hired me, and there's a couple other guys that were kind of like same seniority, you know, mid-level traders. So I'd watch them trade on the screen. Then they would like ask me questions when it was quiet, just so they can like gauge whether I understood what was actually going on. Like if something, you know, because as the markets are active and moving fast, there's a bunch of noise, and it's all about like, can you filter out the noise and figure out what the trades are going through the market that actually matter? So they want to know whether I was picking that up or not, and then just general like option theory and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So after 2 months of doing that kind of stuff, they just basically said, hey, all right, we're going to start you on the overnight session. You are now in like, you're now the guy. So yeah, my day to day, I would get in at like 11 or midnight, something like that.
But tell me about tell me about that first night.
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely,
adrenaline.
so much adrenaline. Cause like, you know,
you're like, please don't blow up. Please don't blow up my first night. Right.
Yeah, exactly. No matter how much theory, you know, like actually trading is a totally different ballgame. So
how active did they expect you to be? Can you talk a little bit about like, you said the positions were huge, but like, can you talk a little bit about the specific trades you were putting on and then almost like, you know, how active you had to be? Was it like constant movement? Were you coming in and out like of trades, or just explain to someone in a little bit more like I'm a fifth grader level.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good question. Cause it's not, there's no like right or wrong answer really.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, they did expect me 100%. If it was a trade I needed to be doing, like, you know, first off, it was expected that I memorized the entire position. So like you have, you know, 30 different expiries and we have all these different strikes and all this different inventory. I need to have the entire book memorized, where we're long, where we're short, what's, you know, our general like risk position in terms of like gamma and vega, the
right.
the standard Greeks of your book. Mm-hmm. So it's, the assumption is you're smart enough, you have this stuff memorized, period. And then secondly, you need to know how the market moves, our market moves relative to other markets. So like if, you know, if equities are selling off, like the S&P 500 is selling off rapidly, that's a risk off scenario, which mm-hmm. which means there's a flight to quality, which means our market, which is an interest rate, which is a quality, you know, it's not a risk asset, it's a safe asset, it's a safe haven asset. Mm-hmm. So if equities sell off, you need to understand that, that there's a good chance that we're going to rally. Our market's going to go up, which means yields go down. That's a risk off move. So kind of just like the general function of fixed income relative to equities and like things that are happening geopolitically.
So you would be watching the other markets, seeing what's going on there, and then you'd start executing trades right away?
So the trading, so for options market making, it's really about what is your theoretical value mm-hmm. and what is paper trying to do. Paper is like the institutional guys, like either people at banks or hedge funds that are putting on like more specific bets. Like that's the true order flow. That's the people that demand, you know, the people that demand this product. They demand the market exists so that they have this liquidity.
Right.
And so we're providing that liquidity.
Okay.
So let's say there's a put spread and it's worth one tick. My market is half bid at one half. And I would just make sure that I'm on both sides of that market for a good size. And if it's being looked at a bunch, like there's a window on our software.
Yeah.
It's called an RFQ window. So if there's a request for quote and you see that it looks like it's an interesting trade that it actually might trade, then you just make sure you're out there. Like you're quoting it and that you're going to participate on the trade. Got and so it. Where it becomes interesting is that, like, let's say the put spread is worth 0.9 and mm-hmm. then on the screen, you see that the put spread is one bid for 5,000. You have to decide based on everything that's happening geopolitically around the world, your inventory, you know, currency pairs, everything. You're looking at your Bloomberg, listening for different sounds. You have like little alerts based on like technical levels,
yep.
all these different things. You have to say, all right, well, do I want to trade this or not? Is it, you know,
is it worth the whatever the that
right.
that mar- that little tick or whatever you want to call it? I don't know how you call it, exactly. but that
yeah, it's a point, it's a dime, it's called
the
a dime,
spread or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's really, so the job is really about like making sure you make the right trade based on these factors.
So sometimes when you're making the trade, it's like it's an obvious trade. It's like, hey, there's a ton of spread here. It's everything's quiet. Like just do it,
yeah.
and it's an easy one. Yeah. And then there's other like kind of gray area ones where you're just trying to. You'll sometimes kind of go for it, and other times you'll just, you know, ease up a little bit.
Exactly. 100%. Yep.
Okay.
So, I mean, when there's clear edge, like if that put spread was worth 0.7 and it's one bid, you need to be the first person selling that.
You're like, hey, I'm in. yeah. Got
so
it.
So I would sell 10,000 of those, no problem. like,
yep.
So yeah, that was kind of a gist. But like, you know, when I first started out, you don't even understand how these things operate. Like, you wouldn't have the intuition to know, okay, this thing might trade, I need to be on it. And you know, memorizing the position is pretty difficult when you have, you know, there's maybe like 500 line items that you have to have the exact number pretty much memorized.
Right.
So you don't really, and like, you know, the risk, you know, you have a risk slide and it's like all your different Greeks, based on your, the different scenarios. So you have like maybe like a packet of 10 pages. You know, we were pretty archaic. It was all on printed paper, but now it's all, most top firms now, they have it on screen. It's more like dynamic software that yep. shows the risk.
That's updating.
But for me, it was on a piece of paper, and it was like maybe like a pamphlet of 10, 20 pages. And I needed basically to also memorize that too. So there's a lot of like memorization and just like.
So this is just so you understand where your exposures are and if things are going right. certain ways, what you need to, almost like how to close that risk or lose less, basically.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and then so the, you know, the biggest thing is like you have to be out there when. Because like for your dollars, the deepest expiry is like 4 years, which is like, you know, most market making desks, it's shorter expiries. Like crude oil, maybe you have like a 6 month expiry.
Right.
Treasury option, it's like 3 month expiry.
Okay.
So you're kind of more in and out of the market. But like for your dollars, it's more of like, you're kind of, you know, like a mortgage company, they'll put on mortgages and like warehouse all these, a pool of mortgages, or they'll like securitize them and sell them off, type thing. But like someone's holding a long duration asset.
Right.
So it's just, if something trades that's illiquid in euro dollars and we've been warehousing it for a year and like it's clearly the trade we need to be doing, that was the biggest stress, was like, if this is a 3-year option and we have the inventory and it's trading the way we need it to trade, like you can't miss that early.
Yeah,
or you get fired. You get fired. So,
because it's yeah. It sometimes will sit for a while, and when that opportunity presents itself, you need to be there and ready.
Exactly.
Got it.
So yeah, I mean, there's definitely a stressful job, but like as long as you're smart and you keep after it, like it's very rewarding.
Cool. So tell me how long you were there, and kind of how long were you doing the overnight shift, and then kind of what made you think it's time to do something new?
Yeah. So I was there for 2 years. First year was kind of, again, more of like getting my feet wet, the introductory. You know, I was a trader, but I wasn't super confident. And then second year, definitely more confident. They gave me, you know, kind of more authority in terms of like the size I could trade. And like, you know,
and you were doing well, you were doing well so far, like they were happy with your.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So after, you know, after my first year review that, you know, they say, hey, like you're doing a great job. Here's your bonus, et cetera.
Do you mind sharing what your base and bonus was or your overall comp?
Yeah, yeah. So, like 90 as a first year trader, like overnight guy, that's like the, you know, you're the bottom of the barrel. You're making 95
for base. Yep.
As your base salary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then your bonus is like, even if like we lost money that year, like, mm-hmm. It was actually, you know, it was kind of a black swan year for the firm. And of course it was the year I showed up, but yeah. So even when we lost money, you're at a lower level trading that you're guaranteed 25K. So, you know, my take home was 120. Mm-hmm. But you know, on a profitable year, it's a totally different story. So you're 95 base plus maybe like one or two times your salary. So
you know, your second, were you lucky enough in your second year to have this firm to do better? And
yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So did you get a bump in base at all in your second year?
Yeah, I got a you know, 10K raise, and then yeah, the bonus was, you know, I guess a six figure bonus.
So about 150 or so, whatever, 100.
Yeah. So yeah, okay. I mean, all day, if you're at a mid to a good tier firm, and you're mm-hmm. a trader like mid level,
yep,
you're anywhere between 150 to 250 is what 150 to 200 to be conservative is what your take home is. Yep. On good years, it'll be over 200 all said and done.
Great. Okay. So let's get to thank you for that data point. So you're in your second year, you're more confident, you're trading bigger size. And then, yeah, tell me, were you still on the overnight?
Yeah, I was still on the overnight. Again, I didn't have any qualms with it. Like it was kind of calming because, you know, you have the desk was, there's 11 people total on the desk. And for me to go in and just be one person on an entire 8 hour shift, I felt like that was kind of cool in its own way. Like it actually spoke a little bit if I ever needed to transition into a new firm.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that was no issue. Yeah. Second year they gave me the right to do block liquidity. So block trades are when you have like a major prime broker, maybe like Credit Suisse or Morgan Stanley that has a, you know, a major institutional player that needs liquidity on large size. So most of the time I would make the market for blocks. So that, you know, the block threshold is 10,000 up. So yeah, if it was something super tricky, like a front month euro dollar trade, mm-hmm. front month is tricky because that has a direct core, like that's a bet directly on like Fed policy over the next few months.
Got it.
So like it's not very easy to
predict
price unless you're like, you're a veteran. Like even people that have been trading the product for years will totally screw up trading front month euro dollar options. It's a super complex product to trade.
Got
other
it.
Than that, yeah. I was trading the block liquidity. And then in terms of like my exit there, you know, so maybe I'm giving away too much. People would figure out the firm, but yeah, I mean, there's just a general restructuring after we lost money that year. You know, the owner of the firm wasn't too happy. They fired a bunch of people, not me. They fired like kind of like the senior level people, the head of the desk and like the senior traders.
Mm-hmm.
There was enough of the risk takers that had been historically profitable.
Yep.
They had all gone, and it just felt like there was a definite culture shift there. And it felt like, you know, overnight's fine, but I want to have kind of more of an impact. And like, I don't know. I was curious. So I started interviewing around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I ended up liking the people that I interviewed with, and they were telling me about like their strategy and what they're trying to do and the amount of people at the firm. And I was like, you know what? I'll hop on board. So yeah. So right now I'm at a startup. It's, you know, we're eight people. We have
three guys that are veteran traders. They traded the floor. They've seen it all.
Yeah.
And they've got a bunch of money stored away and they're investing in technology and they have, you know, they have high hopes to kind of like start this new firm. So we hired a few like Russian programmers. They're really good.
Are you guys starting to, you're already trading or it's getting set up right now?
Oh no. Yeah. We've been trading. Mm-hmm. They've been trading for a couple of years now.
Yep.
And so I kind of hopped on board with them. So yeah, two actual traders, one guy that's kind of, you know, he's a backup trader plus like head of technology and recruiting and
yep.
he kind of like oversees the entire operation. And then we have the three programmers. We have a guy from Citadel who was like a developer. Mm-hmm. We have a guy from the two Russian guys. Actually, I'm not even sure where they're from, but you know, they definitely, you know, they move the dial. They're smart. You know, they know what they're doing. They've been programming for quite a while.
So you're doing a lot of algo. Is it more like algorithmic? Are you taking actual position instead of just market making, or is it still a market making type shop?
It's still market making, but right, like, you know, the constraint now in market making is technology.
Yep.
Like
this, you know, the spreads are so small, right? So
spreads are super small.
Yep.
And it's about latency and whether like can you show enough size out there to compensate for that small spread.
Got it.
Because, you know, yeah, when spreads are small, you need to magnify the amount of size to capture the same amount of dollars.
Makes
sense.
So
it's all about technology getting in and out of the market. So that's what we're working on. It's like, you know, we had to build out a hedger. So like first off, it's like futures liquidity, like making sure we're first in the market for futures. Mm-hmm. And then second, it's like our quoting for options.
What made you think that a startup like this would be better positioned than an established firm that you left? Was it because of the people that were leading this startup and kind of their track record?
I mean, it was a mix of everything. Like, you know, I was just kind of,
you were looking for something new
firm culture. I wanted something new. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's so many smart people at a top firm that like literally to differentiate yourself from a guy that's been trading the same product for 10 years and he's from MIT and he knows exactly like everything. Like you're never, I don't want to say never because I hate admitting that to myself, but like the chances of actually like compounding your income and like changing your life is so much smaller at a big firm like that. So if you can take your
because you're not gonna get a big cut of the P&L anytime.
Yeah,
soon.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like it would take years to get promoted to senior trader and actually get like true, you know, cuts big enough where like you can become partner of that firm.
Can you talk about what the cuts look like from trader, middle level and kind of partner? Like, do you know those numbers?
Yeah. So again, so like if you're trading we'll start from the bottom. If you're a trading assistant, $85K.
Yep.
If you're entry like first year trader, $95K. Bonuses are minimum $25K.
Yep.
And then if you're a mid-level trader, your salary is going to be between 105 to 125.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, bonus gets a little bigger again, like maybe 1 to 2 times your salary. And then if you're a senior trader, depending how long you've been there, things like that, I really don't know the salary, but I, you know, it's 150 plus for sure.
Yep.
You know, the guy that was a senior trader there, he had he's 40 years old, had a family. So I would imagine they're paying him over 200 salary.
Yep.
And then his cut would be, you know, maybe $500,000 if it's a profitable year.
But is it like a based on like what he brings in on his trades? Is it like a percentage of that? Is that how it's done? Or is it more just no?
No.
No, no, no.
So like, so for these bigger markets, like when you're trading products on like the Merck and stuff,
yeah,
the you know, it's just one, it's one product, it's one team effort.
Got
so
it.
You have 11 people trading one product, so it's more of like,
yeah, it's the whole group. Like, got it. Yeah, right. So it's a dumb question. Sorry. Yeah. So
no, that's fine.
All right. So
the head of the desk obviously is taking note about how good you're doing. If you're not doing well, they're gonna like fire you. So
got it.
So yeah, but then head of desk, like, you know, so our firm, I think we averaged, you know, again, we're a major institutional player. Like we trade a ton of size. So our profits on average are like 30 million.
Mm-hmm.
And
for your specific product, that, for your specific,
for product. Our specific product, for us 11 guys. So like maybe the take home for the desk is 30% of that. Cause you have to pay all the developing and fees and pay the firm for the capital backing, things like that.
Yep.
So 30%, that's $9 million. So maybe $4.5 million goes to the head of the desk.
Right. Got it. Makes sense. Okay.
So then the other $4.5 million gets trickled into the 10 other people.
Right. Know? Okay.
So, but like, you know, you can't like, that's an exorbitant amount of money. Like this guy knew exactly what he was doing. He was, you know, he was genius level smart. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, people that are trading at like top firms, but it's not as much exposure. Maybe their profits on the year are 10 to 15 million, 30% of that
call it 3 to 5 million. Mm-hmm. You still have the same number of people. So maybe head of desk gets $1 million and then the rest trickles.
Yeah, it's a little less all the way down. Yep. Okay.
Right.
That's fair. Thank you for those numbers. So you're at this new shop. Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about this new place.
Yeah. So the new shop, I mean, we're working on new technology, working on new ways of like managing an overall volatility book. Because again, spreads are tight and we need to figure out like how do you manage a book beyond like just the traditional Greeks like Vega and Gamma and stuff like that. So like right now my role is working on a project. I'm using Excel, Python, and R. And I'm just like kind of I'm building out like this thing that runs a simulation based on like historical data. So it's difficult because you have to like I have to like build out the infrastructure for like pulling this data in the first place. Like you know, it's stuck up to some people here. So like there's just a lot of like nitty gritty stuff I got to do first before I can even like build out a real trading system.
Right.
But
are you working with the developers in Russia with that for that? Are they helping you?
They're Russian developers, but they live in Chicago. So yes, I am.
Cool.
So I'm working with them, and I mean it's a little slow, like getting the firm on its feet, just because like again it's about manpower and the amount of money you have to like hire people.
Yep.
So. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, I'm still trading the overnight session. It's U.S. Treasuries, so it's a little bit different of a product. It's the entire yield curve. So there's the 2s, 5s, 10s, and 30-year
mm-hmm.
bonds or notes, whatever the hell you want to call them. So we're trading the options on those. So it's definitely a different trade. Like we're doing like relative value stuff
yep.
versus like euro dollars is like LIBOR versus Fed policy expectations.
Are you getting printouts still on your on your positions, or would you guys have a screen now? At this place?
Everything for us, everything's on screen. Yeah, it's a little bit more advanced.
Got it. Cool.
But yeah, so the true appeal was one, just because like the culture was great. Like these guys were kind of funny. Like they're cool guys. And then the one guy worked for Salomon Brothers, and he was the clerk for what the heck's his name? He's the guy that started long-term capital management.
LTC. Yeah, I can't remember. I read the book way back in the day.
John Merriweather.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he worked for him. And so I was just like I immediately gravitated towards that because like I had just read that book, When Genius Failed.
Yep.
I was sold on that. So
great book, by the way.
Yeah, it's really cool.
For those
who are Yeah, awesome. Very good book. Yep.
Cool, man. So anything else before we call the pod in terms of like advice you'd give to your younger self or to any of the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, kind of like based on the story I was telling you guys, like I think it's super important to just have a goal in mind. Like not everyone will have a goal in mind, but if you do, it'll definitely kind of separate you from the rest because you knowing what you want in and of itself is kind of like, that's, you know, it's a good thing. Like, and if you can talk about the process, you know, you just sound a little bit more smart. I don't know if that like makes sense or if I'm saying that well, but, and then like have your own opinions. Like, I don't know if you have a true thought process that's like in an opinion different from someone and it can actually sound smart and it actually could be right. Like that's a powerful thing and you're going to seem authoritative. And like, obviously you're not going to get promoted to like a boss or like a senior level guy right away. But those are like the qualities over time. If you compound them over years, like you'll immediately have the respect of people that are above you and you'll get promoted and things like that.
I mean, don't always be just a yes man or yes woman where you're just saying, agreeing with everything they say. Challenge them
right
a little bit.
I mean, like, come on, you have to be smart and be innovative, and that kind of those kind of things are respected. And then lastly, I think specifically if you want to get into like trading and stuff, like everything's going quant, like quantitative stuff, so like you have to, even if you don't have the experience, maybe you have an econ degree like me, you at least have to like go in and like maybe take a Python course or like work with data sets and just kind of be able to talk about working with data, because you know that's all they're looking for now is they need guys that can build out tools
and major there's a major major shortage of that talent, right? So
yeah.
Like if you can get that on your resume, do it. It's going to give you a big leg up. Cool, man. Well, thank you so much for taking the time,
and thanks to you, my listeners at Wall Street Oasis. If you have any suggestions whatsoever, please don't hesitate to send them my way, Patrick at wallstreetoasis.com. Until next time.